From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
We gardeners all know the experience of loss of plants that don't make it for one reason or another, from a tomato felled by disease in a too humid summer to a venerable old tree taken out by a nasty winter storm. There are losses every year, no matter how expert you are, but some of them really stand out in memory, indelible. Plants we have loved and lost, but never forgotten. That's our topic today with my friend Ken Drews. And you all know Ken, who gardens in New Jersey and is the author of an impressive 20 garden books. Hi, Ken. Lost anything? I had to ask.
Well, no. you proposed this as an idea about a week ago. And
yeah.
I could hardly remember the ones that are missing. I can remember the special ones, but I think I could conservatively, I've lost 50% of the herbaceous plants usually in the first year, but I think it's much more than that. And I look at pictures from 15 years ago. Yeah. I don't even know what those plants are.
Yeah. Well, and you said, you know, I brought this up a week or whatever ago, and the reason being that in August, you and I are going to do a free webinar sort of about really special plants and just like a greatest hits and things we recommend for different purposes and so forth. And so we wanted to mention that, shout that out, but in the process of figuring out that webinar and the curriculum, so to speak, for that webinar, we ended up finding ourselves, you know, talking a little bit about, oh yeah, remember that, such and such. So here we are with a little teaser. But yeah, should we complain for 30 seconds about the weather? How many inches of rain have you had in the last week? I've had 5.2.
Very close to that. But the heat and now mosquitoes, which we rarely have mosquitoes here.
Yeah.
We have mosquitoes like a commercial for Off, you know, when they used to show the guy's arm going in a box. That's what it's like. It's incredible.
Yeah. And we're lucky because neither one of us at the moment has damaging flood or damage to our houses or anything like that. But it's very dramatic, very terrifying. And reading the headlines is even more terrifying. So a shout out to all of you who are trying to farm or have had damage or whatever.
Not to mention orange sky.
Yeah.
Before that.
Yeah. Smoke gets in your eyes, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, plants that have gone before, right? That are, and you know, I love music. You know, I get lyrics stuck in my head, and you know, I have one of those people with like the earworm problem. You know, of a tune going through my head all the time. And this topic reminds me, I have to tell you, Ken, of a Willie Nelson Julio Iglesias duet. I don't know if you remember it. To All the Girls I've Loved Before.
Mm-hmm.
To all the girls I've loved before who traveled in and out my door. I'm glad they came along. I dedicate this song to all the girls I've loved before. But that's kind of like what was on my mind when I brought this up to you. So who have you loved and lost? Who do you want to shout out first?
Well, I guess to let me a little bit off the hook, I'm going to shout out first some plants that it wasn't my fault.
Okay.
It's probably never my fault.
Okay, who are we going to scapegoat for this?
One of the tallest trees on this property was an ash tree, green ash, I think. And I'd heard about emerald ash borer. Everyone was talking about it. And finally, it came here. Mm-hmm. And this ash was over 100 feet tall and over 100 years old.
Wow.
And it lost branch by branch, and it had to come down. So that was kind of icky.
Wow. Yeah.
And I have so much trouble doing that arborside.
Letting go?
Murdering something. Yeah, letting go.
So taking it, saying, okay, I give up. I admit defeat. This is a lost. I've lost this individual. That's,
Especially when it's over 100 years old.
Right.
I feel, although I can weed. But that's about it. I can move a plant if necessary.
Yeah. I was at a friend's garden the other day, and he asked me to come over and look at an old contorted hazel or filbert, whatever we call it, European hazelnut or filbert, Corylus, what is it? Avellana contorta, I think you say. And
right, Harry Lauder's walking stick.
Like that, exactly. And he had this really old one. I mean, when I say really old, I think it was 25 years old. And it hadn't leafed out well this year. And he wondered, you know, if it was the spongy moths or, and I said, no, it's not that it's been defoliated. It's that it didn't leaf out. You know, I kind of looked closely and I said, I think it's a goner. I think it's almost done. And he was just like, oh, cause it's just this sculpture because it's so old. It's amazing. And fortunately that one will be not have to be taken down right away, but could probably be a handsome sculpture for quite a number of years, you know,
or for clematis to grow on.
Exactly. So anyway, but
yeah, they do have a problem. Those currently the corallus have some kind of disease.
They do. Some of, and there's certain varieties that are more resistant than others and so forth. So,
but sometimes it's aesthetic, and I know I should do it. I remember when we first moved here, John Trexler came and looked at all the woody plants, the late John Trexler, who was a woody plant expert. And there was a blue spruce that had hardly any branches except at the top, and it was very tall. And John said, you should get rid of that. And I wouldn't hear of it for over 20 years when it finally didn't have any branches. And it really was an eyesore and a big problem visually and design-wise in the garden. And he was right. From the start.
You know, normally what the common name that people use for blue spruces is they say Colorado blue spruce. That's one of the common names for and the Colorado gives you a hint about that plant, which is that it's a plant that grows at high elevations in a xeric environment, you know, a mountain environment. It's a, it's an upper elevation, not at the very top of mountains, but you know what I mean? And however many generations ago, we turned it into a cultivator, or tried to turn it into a cooperative cultivated plant because it's pretty fast growing. It's attractive. It gives you a lot of oomph in your garden. And we started using it all over, you know, in a lot of regions of the country, except its lifespan outside its natural environment is, if you're lucky, 20, 25, maybe 30 years, but not really. So you outgrow it if you stay in your house for your whole adult life.
Oh, right.
So, you know, it's a lot of times it's not even like you were talking about a pest that came and got your ash. Sometimes it's just that we really shouldn't be trying to grow some of these plants the way we're trying to grow them, right?
And sometimes it's the soil, the alkalinity or the acidity, right. Wrong place. And sometimes right. It's shade. Often it's shade. And sometimes it's because of, I guess I could say, optimism. You know, when somebody says, a grower says 7A, and I think, oh, that's almost the same as 6B.
Right.
Or 6A.
Right.
And maybe even it's there for 3 years before the cold finally gets it.
Right. Right.
But now with the blue spruce and the way things get so much hotter here than they did 25 years ago.
Yes.
So it's
accelerating what I was just talking about. Yep, I mean, I had talked to some pathologists, some plant pathologists from Purdue recently at university in the Midwest, and they were saying, you know, it's just people still come into garden centers asking for it, but good garden centers shouldn't sell it and don't sell it because they know that it's not really right for that climate or the Northeast or whatever.
Yeah, but they around here, they sell it as a shrub about a foot tall.
Right.
And then it becomes a giant tree.
But it's fine if you say, hey, this is a short-lived, you know, kind of thing. Anyway, all right. So you lost an ash recently. I'm trying to think if I lost something recently. I was thinking more back to some, I mean, I remember watching in horror. It was my first sort of close personal experience with the yellow-bellied sapsucker woodpecker, which is a native woodpecker and a wonderful bird and everything. And has this very methodical, very grid-like geometric pattern of drilling into thin barked plants. So it loves, like, among ornamentals, it loves like magnolias. Yeah. And it made mincemeat out of a yellow magnolia. But I had this wonderful, speaking of bark, I had this pine that is Chinese pine species, Pinus bungiana, the what do they call it, what's the I can't remember, the something bark pine, anyway,
lace bark,
Yeah, lace bark, thank you. And it has like a camouflage pattern. Gorgeous, so gorgeous bark. So of course, what does the bird decide to do? Because it's a thin bark also. It decides to make a mess out of it and, you know, weaken the tree. And those really ooze when they're opened up, you know, when big sap wells, grids of sap wells are opened up. And it croaked. And I would love to have that plant because it was not only four season for its coniferous foliage, you know, its foliage, you know, but it was four season for its beautiful trunk. It was just a wonderful plant, a Pinus spongiana, and like you said, lace bark pine. And I just, but I don't dare, you know, I just don't dare. But that's one that I'd recommend to people.
Did it die or did it snap or something?
No, it just got more and more.
It bled to death.
Yeah, it really almost did. It just got weaker and weaker. And that, it really depends. I mean, you can have, I have a magnolia on the other side of the house, a very old magnolia that was very, that was already old when the yellow-bellied sapsucker started being interested in my place, as they are. And it's got lots of sap wells in it, and it's totally fine. It's a Lebner or Loebner, ballerina is the name of it, a hybrid, early flowering white a magnolia. And it's funny to look at it, especially in the winter, because all you see is the sap wells, the grids of sap wells on the on the bark, on the trunk. But the bird never kills it, because I think it was far enough along and well enough established. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think maybe sometimes if they get to the plant early enough, like with that Pinus spongiana, it never had a chance to really
outgrow the damage.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. That was a great plant, though. Highly recommend
it. I love that plant. There's one at Wave Hill that is spectacular. You've probably seen. And one year, somebody carved a heart in the bark, and it was somebody loves somebody. And I was so outraged, but 3 years later, it had healed completely so that you couldn't see it, which is funny because if you do that to a beech tree, it's there forever.
Yes.
But the lace bark actually healed over.
Yeah.
But yours was too young.
Yeah, to really tolerate it, yeah.
When I lose something, of course, I want to know why. And we had a forest pansy, Cercis canadensis, which is red bud. And the forest pansy has purple leaves. It's very attractive. And the one that we grew got huge. And 1 year, Hurricane Irene and Tropical Storm Lee, the tree was underwater just for a couple of days and it died.
Right.
And that made me think that Cercis, of course, wants better drainage, but I have sandy soil, but it needs that oxygen. And a friend of mine lost hers, and I saw that there was a sprinkler head right next to it. So she was actually drowning this plant.
Right.
And we had seven hemlocks on this property when we came here. We only have one now. And there was a gigantic one that had been attacked by woolly adelgid. So it was kind of weak. And then in that same hurricane, when it was under 4 feet of water, just for a couple of days, that's all it took. Because hemlocks, too, have very shallow roots. And they need air. You don't think about trees needing air. You think about them needing water, of course, but they do need oxygen at the roots.
Right. You can literally suffocate them. Yeah. You mentioned the eastern redbud, Cercis canadensis, and that purple-leaved cultivar forest pansy. And there's a bunch of dark-leaved ones, different cultivars. And right. I was recently speaking to the director of a public garden on an old estate in Pennsylvania, in Villanova, Pennsylvania, called Stoneleigh. And he was telling, they espalier on the old estate house, they espalier a lot of native woody plants and vines as well. And one of the ones that they love to espalier, which I hadn't seen it done, I mean, it's obvious, is the things like forest pansy, the dark-leafed eastern red buds. You know, they cut out a lot of the branches and make like a fan kind of thing. And you know, it's just really dramatic with those beautiful, what are they, heart-shaped, would you say, the leaves? They're beautiful.
Yeah, I got it. Sure.
Yeah. And there's one that's a tricolor leaf. Have you seen that one? Carolina Sweetheart?
Like the suns. Oh, is that the one that's yellow?
There's a sunset-y looking one too, but there's like sort of a one with pink in it as well, pink and purple. And, oh my goodness.
There's too many. And I have Silver Cloud. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No, no.
That has almost pure white foliage with little touches of pink. And I thought that's going to get damaged in the sun. And I planted it in the shade and it really limped along for about 3 years. And I was in North Carolina and I saw that tree growing in a lawn in North Carolina in the full sun. So I dug it up and moved it to a sunnier spot and it's fantastic.
Huh.
And it doesn't burn. Surprising.
Huh. Yeah. So a great native, you know, the red buds are great. And some of the cultivars with the colorful leaves give you a little extra oomph as far
and
as
there's weeping ones. And yeah. It's funny how that happens.
Yeah. So what else, any other ones that you want to shout out that you still remember from?
Well, years ago, and it's not that many years, I was waxing poetic about really probably the showstopper in this garden was a kind of Cornus cusa, a Korean dogwood variegated called wolf eyes. And
right.
We were talking about it and you said, oh, there's a problem with wolf eyes. And the Cornus cusa, we always thought that grow those because they don't get diseases like Cornus florida, the eastern dogwood. And it was fine. I thought, oh, what does she know?
Because she's an idiot. My friend Margaret, she's like such an idiot. It's unbelievable.
And then I think the next year it had so many flowers. And sometimes when a plant makes a lot of fruit or a lot of flowers, it's kind of like a
last
death
thing, gasp.
Right, a last gasp. But that was 1 year it had a lot of flowers. And the next year the branches started to die back. And then the next year it died. And
wow.
It had, yeah, I'd had it for long enough that it had the wonderful bark. You know, the talk about camouflage.
Yes.
The bark was beautiful. This tree was so gorgeous. And it died.
Yeah, and as you said, Cornus florida is prone to the native flowering dogwood is prone to anthracnose, in particular, in our climate in the Northeast, in places where there's, you know, humid kind of conditions that promote it, and most of the cusas are not, but wolf eyes. And there's like three, I think, that are especially prone to it.
Now you tell me.
Autumn rose, moonbeam, and wolf eyes or something. And I had read that because I had had the plant thinking the same thing years before and had the same experience where it declined with anthracnose.
So, I got it at Trade Secrets.
Yeah.
Years and years ago.
Plant sale. Right, yep. Right. So, yeah. So that's, I love the Cornus cusas. I would be heartbroken if I lost. I only have two, but I would be heartbroken if I lost them because they are so floriferous, right? I mean, they're so showy.
Yeah, and later than the Floridas. So
yeah.
The Cornus florida is over. And then in between are these wonderful Rutgers hybrids that so far, knock dogwood, don't get diseases, and they're
right.
Pretty fast growing. We have Stellar Pink, I think it's called, and Celestial Shadow. They have mostly they have Rutgers names because they're from Rutgers
University, right? The breeding program, right?
But they take the best of both species.
Yeah. One plant I really miss, one woody plant I really miss that I had for so many years, and it was kind of a rarity, a real oddity when I first got it. And I don't even remember, I got a tiny little plant from somewhere, maybe it was from like Forest Farm Nursery by mail order out west or something like that. Aeschylus pavia, the red buckeye. And it's kind of like a big shrub, small tree type of a creature.
Right.
Maybe it gets 10, you can get to 20 feet technically, but I haven't seen that too often. And it's like southeastern down into Florida. It's like North Carolina down to Florida native. I mean, and it kind of goes over, its range goes over to like in the middle of Texas and up and over to Illinois. And, you know, so it's not native here, but it's a Native American plant to those places that I just mentioned. And it has these incredible panicles, you know, these stems with flowers coming off them in all directions of, if you know any of the Aeschylus, you know that look of deep red, and they're just like incredible plants. And I love that little tree, and it just kaboom, goodbye. It didn't decline, it just croaked. And that was my experience, and that's one I'd like to have again. And I don't know why I haven't made room for, you know, put another one in somewhere. But that reminds me that same experience was what was probably my, gosh, one of my most beloved of all that I had for many, many years, a Korean maple, not a Japanese maple, but a Korean maple, or maple Acer pseudosiboldianum. Mm-hmm. And it was right when you came into the place, you opened the gate and you came in the driveway, it was right there on your right, this big statement, and it was nice bare. It was, you know, like a sort of Japanese maple-y look bare, but it was especially beautiful in leaf. And the fall color was unrivaled by anything I've ever seen, as Japanese maples also tend to be. And 1 year, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, it was perfectly fine. It got its great fall color, et cetera. It went to sleep for the winter and it never woke up. Oh. And those are the ones that not only make me sad, but unhinge me in the way that, you know, that's probably a soil-borne thing, like verticillium or something, right. Something in the soil. And, you know, it's just mysterious. And the trickiest part then is you can't go buy another one and stick it in that hole. That's, you couldn't risk it. Thinking. Okay.
That's a good rule of thumb. If you get another one, don't plant it in the same place.
Yeah, and a pathologist, another plant pathologist told me, actually someone else at Purdue told me not long ago, if you see one of those sudden death things with the woody plant and you suspect it might be verticillium, plant an eggplant there.
You mean as a test case?
Yes, because eggplants are extremely susceptible to verticillium wilt. And use that as your test. Now, you can obviously send plant samples to the pathology lab and so forth, but isn't that funny? So the eggplant test. any others you want to share?
The Nisus esculapavia, which is one of the parents of the red horse chestnut, mm-hmm. That I ever saw, was in Virginia at Williamsburg. They had beautiful ones. But we've had one here for years, and it's quite small. But yeah. It blooms. But I was thinking with the Syrsus, for example, the red buds, they grow from Texas to into Canada. Mm-hmm. Not the same. There's more than one species, but that one species, canadensis, does grow all along the East Coast. Yes. So sometimes you have to think, where did this forest pansy originate?
This individual, the genetics of this individual.
Even though we're buying it, right? Or this variety.
So what ecotype, but what ecotype within that is it? You know what I mean?
And right. Yeah, that's why maybe if it came from the mountains, it needed to grow on rock.
Yeah.
Or alkaline or something. So that's one way to, because now we're talking about tree forensics and garden plant forensics.
Yeah.
You know, what killed my plant? You know, that wonderful poem.
Yes. Yes.
By Jeffrey Charlesworth.
Yes. 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 I think you still have one plant that I miss very much, lo these many years later, that I finally lost. It's a rambling rose, and I don't even know how you really pronounce his name, but I say Wilschenblau. It's like it's a historic rose, 1909 introduction. It's like a semi-double, it's a rambler. And I think at the time, and even now, I think it's billed as like the closest to blue that a rose gets.
It's the bluest rose even.
Yeah, yeah. And I eventually lost that, but... And I actually think that was when a tree fell adjacent to it, and that whole area got kind of trashed. I think that was not a disease kind of a thing. You have Wilschenblau?
Yes, in a terrible place, but it's alive and it blooms because it's a big plant. So it can be a big plant if it's not dead. And it does have those violet flowers. And, I don't think they're fragrant, but it's really beautiful.
So we have maybe 3 minutes left. Is there another one you want to tell? I have one more that I could, but I could skip it. Or
no, you could, but you're breaking my heart here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm thinking about the hemlocks that are gone, and there's one left.
Yeah.
And the ashes, of course, and the spruces. There was Norway spruce. They're gone. The blue spruce is gone. It's hard to remember the ones that are gone unless you see a stump.
Or look at old photos sometimes. That's what I find reminds me of something.
I'm curious, what's the one you were going to mention?
Well, I was going to say, you were talking before about you know, wet spot can kill something. And clematis really hate wet wet feet, especially in the winter. And I had two yellow clematis, which is not a common color in clematis. One was Tanjudica. It was the variety called Bill McKenzie in the Tanjudica group. And it's got almost these like purpley brown centers, the stamens, or this gorgeous contrasting color to the vivid yellow, like canary yellow. And oh, it's a great bloom. It's just a wonderful plant. And I had it in a spot that I developed one of those winter wet spots of, you know, roof runoff and then a puddle, and I didn't help it. You know what I mean? I didn't realize it was getting into a low spot for the winter, and that drowned. And the other yellow one was a paler yellow. And by the way, I could get another Bill McKenzie, and I should, that's available. But the other one was a paler yellow that I knew as Chionensis lemon bells, but it's been changed. The name is now Clematis coriana or something, lemon bells. It was like yellow, pale yellow, flushed with pink, and the stems, the vine was almost like a blackish purple. Mm. Oh my goodness, it was the most delicious, beautiful thing. And I don't have any idea what happened to it. And that one's really hard to get. So that's sometimes the worst thing, is when it's almost not replaceable, or you have to get on a waiting list and hope to get one someday if you're lucky, kind of thing.
You reminded me with the drowning, and how sometimes if in a wet spot, then it turns to ice.
Yes.
And the roots can't take up any oxygen or anything.
Exactly.
And it does kill it. But I grew Lady Banks Rose, which is not hardy where I am in New Jersey, in Brooklyn.
I remember.
And it grew up at the back of the house, and it grew to almost four stories tall. And people would come when it was in bloom with 1,000 flowers, unfortunately not fragrant, little double butter yellow flowers. And even Marco said, "You can't grow that here." They would stand there looking at that shrub and say, "You can't grow that here."
Yeah.
I think Judy Zook said that too.
Yeah. So we're talking Marco Stufano, formerly of Wave Hill, and Judy Zook, formerly of Brooklyn Botanic Garden. And we've, of course, run out of time, but I'm thinking now longingly of that rose on the back of your Brooklyn.
I'm growing the white double one now, which is
gorgeous.
And it's alive.
Good. So. Well, thank you for another fun conversation.
Yeah, that was something.
With the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, I'll give information about our free webinar that we're going to do in August. Okay.
Great.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Good.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, I hope. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening with the occasional plant loss meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.